Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Nun Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Nun Hey. In our previous Shiur, we mentioned that the word Tov did not appear in the first set of 10 commandments, in the first Luchos. The Gemara explained that the reason for that was that the Luchos would be broken and the symbolism of Tov, of goodness, of plenty, of blessing being destroyed was something that the Almighty wanted to avoid, and hence didn't use the word Tov or any variation thereof in the first set of 10 commandments. In fact, the Marsha observes that the letter Tes doesn't appear in the first set of the 10 commandments. And following from that point, we continue with our Gemara, which features someone seeing a letter Tes in a dream. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we have a marking issue to deal with, a structural issue. As you open the Gemara, you notice Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, his name is underlined, followed by a crown shape. And if you skim down, you'll see another Memra, another statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi on the first wide line, also with a crown shape. On the side of the Gemara, we have the crown featured, Haroeh, that's the word we highlighted with this geometric shape. They are Memros Shel Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi al Marois b'Chalom, turning things one sees in a dream. Number one, Haroya Ois Tes. Number two, Haroya Hesped b'Chalom. Hesped, it has to do with a eulogy. The Gemara will point out that seeing the word Hesped spelled out in a dream is a sign that heaven has mercy for that individual. Now the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Haroya Tes b'chalomo, one who sees the letter Tes in his dream, Simin Yofe Lo, it's a good sign. My Taimo, why is that? Now you'll notice a double underline, which is one of our series markings. On the side of the Gemara, we indicate Shlavei Biur. These are stages in clarification and analysis. Loma Re'iyas Tes b'chalom, Simin Yofe Lo, why is that seeing a letter Tes represents a good sign? So the Gemara says, Ilema, if you're going to say Mishum Dechtiv Tov, because the letter Tes is the beginning of the word Tov, well, which means, of course, good, Ema, there's another word which has a very negative connotation, V'te-te-siha b'matate-hashmeid. Well, the gist of that pasuk is that people will swept away in destruction. So there you've got the word Tes. In fact, a word beginning with the word a letter Tes, and quite a few Tesses, in fact. So how can you say that just an isolated word letter Tes is a good sign? So the Gemara says, in fact, Chad Tes Kormhinan. What our intention was is where you see a singular Tes, and the word and posuk we just cited has many tesses in it. And multiple tesses is not a good sign, necessarily, but one singular tess is a good sign. Ema tumasa b'shuleha. Well, here's a singular tess in the word tumasa, and which is a negative posuk. It indicates a defilement within her. Tes Beis Kwamrinan. So the Gemara answers the vision referred to by Rabbi Shoban Levi is where you see a Tes and a Beis. Tespes, that's basically spells out the word Tov if you have the Vav absent. But the sound, the vowelization remains. Well, Tespes, are you sure that's a good sign? Emor Tovu B'Oresh Shoreha. This is a pasuk also from the Book of Lamentations, from the Book of Echa, which is a negative pasuk. Tespes, in this word, Tovu B'Oresh Shoreha, means the gate, her gates sank into the ground. A pasuk of destruction. What's so good about seeing a letter Tess in a dream then? Ella, we go back and tell you that Hoyol Uposach Bayakosuv Litoiva Tchila Shemibracious Ad Vayar Elikim Ezor Kitov Loksiv Tess. The significance, the symbolism of the letter Tess as representing good is because the letter Tess does not appear in the Torah until the word Tov is spelled out. It's the first appearance of the letter Tess is at the word Tov. Hence, the letter Tess in a dream is a good sign. V'yomer Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Horoya Hesped b'chalomo, one who sees Hesped. At this point, you might think it means one sees a eulogy in one's dream. What is the significance of that? Chasu alav min hashamayim upaduhu. We've highlighted with a squiggle underline key letters. The word chasu begins with a ches, followed by a samach. The letter ches and the letter hey in droshes are interchangeable. So you have the equivalent of a hey samach. The next word that you can see we've highlighted, paduhu, means he's been redeemed, is spelled with the letters pei dalet at the beginning. So you combine these four letters, you get the word hesped. So one who sees hesped in his dream, mercy has come upon him from heaven, and he has been redeemed, which is essentially a good sign. Vahani mili b'ksava. The reference to a eulogy doesn't mean that you dreamt about an oral eulogy, a physical eulogy, but rather you saw the word hesped spelled out, hey, samach, pei, dalet. V'chein chayavov kayotze bohen v'chulei. In our Mishnah, we saw that there is a culpability for falling, for an animal falling in the pit, in a pit, and that extends not only to domesticated animals, but also chaya, undomesticated, wild type animals that a person might have ownership of, and oifen, birds. Omar Reish Lakish. Actually, before we begin the Gemara, on the side we have a topic heading, which reads Kilayim, mixing different breeds. We mention in parentheses harbo, it's breeding animals of different varieties. Number one, ba'oifos, birds. Number two, dogim, fish. So, in our Gemara, we go back to the text, Omer Reish Lakish, Kan Shono Rebbe, based on this Mishnah, Rebbe teaches, Rashi, three lines from the top, says, B'mishna zu, dikotoni kilayim, noyheg ba'oifos, Lomadnu, from our Mishnah that teaches that the prohibition of mixed breeding applies to birds, Lomadnu dechol oifois kilayim ze boze min b'sheino mino, that all birds, if they're not of the same variety, mixed breeding them would be a kilayim violation. Before we go any further, just want to clarify, I oversimplified matters when mentioning the quote from the Mishnah that chaya and oaf are included, not just regarding falling into a pit, but regarding all eight areas of halacha that were listed in the Mishnah. Within the list, there was also kilayim, as we saw in Rashi. Rashi reminded us of that. So, turning now to the Gemara, Rish Lakish tells us that that Rebbe, based on this Mishnah, says Tarnigol Tavos Upesuni Kilayim Ze Bozeh. These are the names of three different kinds of birds. The actual translation is not of extreme relevance at this point. If we were learning to learning applied halacha, so it would be very important, but we're not engaged in that right now. Rashi offers French words for them. Tarnagol is associated with a chicken, but the Tavos and Pesuni, Rashi gives you, as I say, French translations for that. For our purposes, though, they are prohibited to breed one with the other, to mate one with the other. The Gemara says, Pshita, do I? That's obvious. It's they're very different. Omar Rav Chaviva, Mishum Dorovu Bahadi Hadodi, Mahu Detemo Min Chadhu. Since they can breed from one another, I would have thought they are a homogeneous species. Kamash Malon. So Reish Lakish informs us that that is not so. And hence they are considered separate species, and the prohibition of interbreeding of kilayim will apply. Omar Shmuel, Avos v'Avos Habar, kilayim ze bozeh. Two kinds of birds, one's called Avos and the other is called Avos Habar, are different species. And hence, they would be called kilayim, mixed breeding if you try to mate one with the other. Maskif lo rovo bar rav honon. My taimo, why do you consider the avos and avos habar different varieties? Ilemo mishum dahai orich kuei, because one has a long, now kuei, Rashi, at this point, says it means a beak. Hartumo is the word Rashi uses, and he gives you a French word that is very much like the English word beak. So, is it because one has a long beak, v'hai zutar kue, and the other has a short one, el ameato? Well, using that kind of analysis for differentiation of species, gamla parsa v'gamla taya, are you going to then say, referring to these two different kinds of camels, dahai olim kue? Now here, the word kue means neck. One has a thick neck, and the vahai cotton kue, and the other has a thin or narrow neck. Hochi nami dahavu kilayim zeboze, are you going to suggest incorrectly that a gamla parsa and a gamla taya are different species? So what is the reason that by the avos and the avos abar do you say that they are different species? Elo Omar Abaye. So Abaye gives one explanation. Ze beitzov mibachutz veze beitzov mibifnim. Beitzov here is a reference to the male testicles. So by the Avos Habar, it's visible, it's recognizable, it's external. The other one, the standard Avos, it's internal. So you can see that the fact that there's this additional anatomical difference, that is what makes the difference between them. Rav Papa Amar, Hai ha te'uno chad bi'asa b'shichala, v'ha te'uno kamo bi'asa b'shichala. Rav Papa points out that on the female side of things, there's also a difference between them. The one carries in its midst one egg. It doesn't produce another egg until it lays the first egg. And the other one has within it multiple eggs. Rashi points this out regarding the Avos Habar carries only one egg, and it doesn't bear a second egg until it lays the first egg. Whereas the standard avos will carry multiple eggs within it at any given time. Omar b'yirmiya, Omar Reish Lakish. Hamarbia shnei minim shebayam loike. One who mixed breeds two varieties of sea creatures is subject to lashing. An indication that that would be forbidden. My taima. What is the reason for that? Omar Rav Ado Bar Ahava Mishmei De'ula Asya Leminehu Miyabosha. With regard to land creatures, Yabosha is a reference to the dry land creatures. The word Mineu appears. And we know that with regard to land creatures, there is a prohibition of interbreeding all of them. So there's a Gezeira Shava from land creatures to sea creatures, that they too are under the prohibition of interbreeding. Boy Rachba. Rachba raises a question, a Kilayim related question. However, Rachba's question is focuses on the other aspect of Kilayim, which has to do with drawing a plow or a cart with two different varieties of animals simultaneously. And on the side of the Gemara, we indicated this with our topic heading, She'elas Rachba, Rachba's question, Hamanig Sfina. He is going to speak about drawing a boat. If you're familiar with the way barges are transported along a river, in days past, long ropes were attached to the barge, and animals or even slaves once upon a time would draw these river-going barges by walking along the river bank while attached to these long ropes attached to the boat, to the barge. So we're asking about that scene, but Rachba is asking where it's being drawn be'ez, which is a land animal, behema diabosha, and a dag, and a fish. So someone lassoed a fish and a goat, and they're drawing the boat at the same time, each one in its own domain. Is that permissible? We know that drawing a cart on dry land with with, for example, an ox and a donkey tied together at the same time would be prohibited. So our Gemara, boy Rachba, Rachba asks, Hamanig be'iza v'shibuta, one who draws a boat with an iza, a goat, a shibuta is a name of a type of fish, mahu, what is the din? And this has two sides to it, two sides of analysis. Mi amrinon, kevon de'iza lo nachis b'yam. A goat never descends into the sea. Vishibuta lo solit liaboshin. The shibuta never rises to dry land. They are completely separate. Lo klum ovid. You haven't violated anything because of their domain disparity. Odilma hashtomias ko manig. Or do you focus on the action being done? And action wise, they are both participatory in the same activity. Maskif lo ravina, elo me'ata. According to your raising of this as a problem, would the following also be a problem? Chiber chita usora biyoto. A man held in his hand at the same time a wheat kernel and a barley grain. Vizora, and he plants them while positioned at the border of Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael, we call Chutz La'aretz. Vizora chita ba'aretz usora b'chutz la'aretz, and he deposits the two seeds in the ground at the same time, one on one side of the border and one on the other side of the border. Hachi nami demechayev. We should add that the prohibition of mixed breeding plants, we call Kile Zroim, applies only in the land of Israel. So here you have two disparate realms. Are you going to say that this is prohibited? the Gemara response to Ravina's question. Ravina's question essentially is a question on a question, but Ravina was asking an attack type question, whereas Rachba's question was more of a interrogative clarification question. So we reject Ravina's attack by saying, Amri, hachi hashta, how can you compare your case to Rachba's question? Hossam, regarding the planting of different varieties, Eretz mokom chiyuva, chutz l'aretz lo mokom chiyuva. The land of Israel is a region in which there are legal restrictions. The area outside Eretz Israel, there are no restrictions. So there isn't any question to begin with. Once you say that the issue deals with one of the seeds being in Chutz Laretz, there's no isur whatsoever that applies there. There's no prohibition or restriction that applies there. However, hacha, regarding the fish and the goat question, idi v'idi, the sea and dry land, chiyuvahu, are places where both are places where the kilayim restriction has relevance. Therefore, there is still room for raising Rachba's question, and we don't have an answer in this Gemara to that question, but the attempt on the part of Ravina to show that the question has no validity, that attempt fails. As you can see, with the help of the one above, we've completed the fifth perek of Bava Kama, and now we turn to Amud Beis and begin the sixth perek of our Masechta. Hakoines Tzon Ladir. One gathers in sheep and goats. Tzon is an umbrella expression referring to, sometimes termed, light cattle, sheep and goats. And he brings them into the deer. The deer is the barn where they stay, the enclosed area in which they stay. Fenoal b'fonel koroi. Notice we're breaking the Mishnah down into different parts. We're calling this one Aleph, which will be followed by Beis, and then later on the third line, two Aleph, followed by Beis. So one Aleph describes the animals in an enclosed area, and the Noal b'fonel koroi means the door is closed upon them, locked upon them in a proper fashion. V'yotza v'zika, and the animal got out and caused damage. Potter, the animal owner, is exempt. He did what he was expected of him. What else could he have done? Lo no'al b'fonel koroi, if he didn't close the gate or close the door properly. V'yotza v'zika, the animal got out and damaged. Chayav, then, he bears responsibility. Number two, Aleph. Nifritza b'layla shaputzu alistim, v'yotza v'zika, if the barn was broken into by night, or bandits busted in, and the animal escaped and did damage, potter, the owner, is exempt. Hotziu halistim, if the bandits took the animals out and they did damage, listim chayovim, the bandits are guilty. If the owner left the animals in an enclosed area, even though he may have closed the door on them properly, the sun was beating down upon them, causing extreme discomfort for the animals, and as a result, they got out. Rashi on the top says, Hinicho b'chamo mitzara le'shimsha, the sun causes the animals great discomfort. V'lo sagi l'b'ni l'karoi, mere closing of the fence or the gate on them is not enough the mukminon b'gemara, the hainu delas yichol lamo bruach mitzia, where the closing of the gate is a reference to a door that can stand up in a normal strength wind. But when you add this extreme discomfort factor to the animals, we'll see more about this later in the Gemara, but that increases the chances of the animal gaining exit. And therefore, that's irresponsible on the part of the owner. Or, Shemosra l'cheri sheitev ekotnet, the Mishnah says, or he gave the animal to be watched by one of these inepts, a deaf mute, a imbecile, or a minor, viyotza vezika, and the animal escaped. Chayov, the owner of the animal, is guilty and must compensate for damage. Mosra l'roya, if the owner gave the animal to a shepherd, nifnas haroya tachtov, the shepherd assumes the responsibilities that the owner had up till that point. Noflo legino venenes, an animal fell from a rooftop of its owner into a garden owned by a neighbor. Another scenario is there was a road that was higher up than some garden lower down, and it fell from the road down into someone's garden, venenes, and experienced a benefit. Mishalemis mashinenes, payment is made in accordance to the benefit the animal received and not in accordance with the damage that it caused. Yordo kedarka vehezika, if the animal didn't fall, but rather descended into the garden in a normal fashion and caused damage, then payment is made according to the damage that it caused. The obvious difference between a payment mashinenis and a payment mashizika, we can illustrate at this point. We'll wait for the Gemara, of course, to focus on this. But in falling into a garden, it might have fallen onto some very expensive type of vegetables, and the animal's fall was cushioned by that, so it benefited by falling onto the very expensive vegetables, but the value of the cushioning would be much less than the market value of those vegetables. However, if the animal descended in a normal way and started eating those very expensive vegetables, so the payment will be in accordance with what it actually damaged. Ketzad mishalemes ma'ase hazika. How do we make the evaluation when we talk in terms of in accordance with what it damaged? So just imagine you have a field that has many rows of vegetables growing in it. The animal ate one of the rows. Shomin beisah boisah the kama hoisi yofa the kama hiyofa. You evaluate the value of that entire field and how much that entire field would be worth minus the row that the animal ate. That method of evaluation represents, we'll say, a leniency for the owner of the aggressor animal, as opposed to simply looking at the row that the animal ate in isolation, not as part of a larger field. If we would have evaluated the row in isolation, the cost would have been much higher. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, Ochla Peres Gemurim, Rabbi Shimon says that if the animal ate completely ripe vegetables, Mishalemes Peres Gemurim, then the payment is made in accordance with what it ate. In Se'ah, so if it ate one Se'ah is eight, a measure, you pay the value of that measure. Im Sosayim, if two Se'ah, then pay the cost of two Se'ah. So that when you're dealing with totally ripe vegetables, according to Rabbi Shimon, the payment is not made in terms of the field as a whole, then subtracting the value of that area that it ate. But you look at the damage in isolation. The method that the Tanakhama, that the first opinion cited, has relevance according to Rabbi Shimon if you're dealing with unripe vegetation, as Rashi points out. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, and it reads, Muad Sagi Le Shmir Pusa, Man Tana. This, by the way, is a topic that we've dealt with in the past, and we're raising this discussion in light of our Mishnah again. A Muad is an animal that's shown that it has a tendency to damage. It's damaged already three times. That is true in the case of Karen. Karen is goring. Here, we're dealing with an animal that eats. Shane and Regel are additional forms of damage that we've spoken about extensively in our Masechta. Those are forms of damage that pay full damage immediately, as opposed to Karen, as opposed to goring, which during the first three offenses, the owner pays only half damages. Not so in the case of Shane Varegel. So Shane and Regel represent a status of Muad at the outset. We'll have to bear in mind as we go through the Gemara, do we apply the same standard in all that the same standard of Muad that you find by Karen to Shane and Regel in all areas of Halacha or not? I think we can say at the outset that as far as Nezek Sholem, full damage compensation, so Shane, Regel, and Karen would be basically similar, that you have to pay full damage. There's room for discussing Shitas Rabbi Yehuda that mentioned that by Karen Tzad Tamuz B'Mekoy Memedes, but that's a detail. Let's not get involved with that. Simply, the description of paying full damage, Karen Muad and Shane and Regel, they all pay full damage. What about Shmira requirements? Shmira, as with guarding, what level of protection of guarding must you provide in order to be exempt in the event that the animal does do damage anyway? Now the Gemara. Tana Rabbanon, Ezo Karoi, Vezu Shelo Karoi. Our Mishnah made reference to the closing of the door, Karoi, in a proper, sufficient fashion. The question here is what does that mean in practical terms? So if you you can see that we have a little squiggled arrow to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, enabling you to look back and see where the word originally was mentioned, the top line of the Omid in the Mishnah. What is meant by Karoi and what's meant by not Roy, which the Mishnah mentioned in saying Lo Noah Bufna Karoi. Delis Shiachela Lama Bruch Mitsuya, a door that has enough strength to withstand a normal strength wind, and that's what you closed on the animal while it was in its pen, its barn. Zeho Karoi, that's sufficient. That's considered a proper level of watching. She'ena yichela lamoy beruach mitsuya, a type of door that's not able to withstand a normal type wind. Zehu shelo karoi, that's considered improper, insufficient. The door that is capable of standing up against a normal force wind is what we would classify as shmira pusa, minimum amount of protection, of guarding against the animal's exit. we are also describing our Mishnah, where a sheep or goat is fenced in with the closing of the door karoi, the closing of this type of door that stands up against normal strength wind. The destruction, the damage caused by sheep or goat is destruction through its either trampling or through eating. We don't associate keren, which simply refers to, on a simplistic level, refers to goring. Sheep and goat don't do that. I speak a little hesitatingly right now because keren itself is a catchphrase or catch term that, though translated, means goring, but we know that it refers to causing damage in an unusual fashion. That possibility, that capacity, exists with regard to other animals, sheep and goats as well. However, the approach taken by Rashi in this particular sugya is that keren is not applicable to sheep and goats, and my understanding is that keren in the simple form, namely goring, is not something that sheep and goats do, but eating and trampling is something that they do, in fact, do, and full payment is made. So, since full payment is made, we look at shein and regel, shein, eating, regel, trampling, we look at them as mu'ad. So, in other words, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, providing minimum level of shmir, or shmir p'husa, closing of the door karoi, is sufficient to exempt the owner in the event that damage takes place after that from any payment. So that we are saying that mu'ad, shmira p'chusa, is sufficient. Again, the term mu'ad is relevant here because the damage caused by the sheep or goats would be through shein and regel, which is mu'ad. Full payment is made at the outset, and our Mishnah tells us that supplying shmira p'chusa is enough to exempt the owner if it does, if the animal does somehow get out and create damage. The example I think that you can see in the Rashi would be, how would the animal get out? If a gale force wind came and knocked the door down, that's called a ruach she'eno mitsuya. So the door won't stand up against that. But you did what you were expected to do. You supplied shmira p'chusa. If a gale force wind knocked the door down and the animal got out, you're exempt. You are potter. You do not have to compensate for damage that the animal may cause. So, Rav Omar Rav Moni Bar Patish, Man Tana Muad Desagi Le B'Shmira P'chusa. Who is the author of this ruling that Muad Shmira P'chusa is sufficient? Once again, Shmira P'chusa is a door that stands under normal force winds. Notice the numbering that we have here. We have the first approach, says Reb Yudah Hi. Later, there's a number two, at which point the Gemara says, Afilu Tema Rebbe Meir. We haven't seen the names in a Tanaic source today. We've seen them before in our Masechta, but the second approach will say that Shmir P'chusa is enough for the Tzon in the Mishnah, even though Rebbe Meir says that for Mu'ad of keren in other circumstances, shmir p'chusa would not be enough. So let's continue in the Gemara with the approach with approach number one. So who says that mu'ad suffices with shmir p'chusa? We answer Rabbi Yehuda Hi, Disnan. It's in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. Here we have a Tanaic source in which there are three Tanaic opinions. We're highlighting with our markings two of the opinions. The source says, Koshra Ebola v'moysera, v'noa lefona of karoi, if you tied up the animal in its reins, or you closed the door behind it properly, v'yotza v'hizik, and the animal got out and damaged, echot tam v'echot muad, chayav divrei, Rabbi Meir. whether it's a docile type animal or it's an animal with proclivity toward causing damage, a muad, an animal that's demonstrated its aggressive nature, the owner is chayav. What we see here is that shmira p'husa is not enough for a tam, not enough for a muad. Our Mishnah spoke about a muad, and we indicated that shmira p'husa was sufficient. So at this point, Rabbi Meir doesn't seem to be the author of our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, tam chayov, muad poter. Rabbi Yehuda says that the owner, if the animal was tam, the shmira p'husa referred to here of Noah Lefon of Karoi is not enough. If the animal is muad, then the shmir p'husa is enough. Muad poter. Shneamar velo yishmir nubalov. This pasuk is in the context of the muad. V'shomer hu zeh, and when is there guilt on the part of the owner if he doesn't provide any guarding? But you did provide guarding for the muad, and therefore the owner is exempt. He did what he was expected to do. There's a much more elaborate discussion as to how Rav Yehuda comes to this conclusion, which seems a little paradoxical, but we've learned that already in the past. We're not going to go over that here. For our purposes, though, we see that a muad animal that receives shmira p'husa, we saw here in this source that you were no'al lefon of kroy, you close the door on it properly, that's enough to exempt the owner. So shmir p'husa is enough, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for a muad. Rabbi Lazar Omer, this is a third shita, but we're not going to emphasize him in this particular shir, but Rabbi Lazar Omer, ein lo shmira elo sakin a muad, has no watching, even shmir me'ula, even high level watching is not sufficient for a muad. At this point then, the Mishnah, our Mishnah, that said that tzon, which represents an entity that causes damage on a muad level, the Mishnah said, no'ah b'fana k'roi, a proper door closing is enough to create exemption for the owner if damage results, and we explained that no'ah b'fana k'roi meant shmira p'husa. Shmira p'husa then for a muad is sufficient, according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara here says, Afilu Temo, Rabbi Meir. You can say that our Mishnah is authored or is in agreement with Rabbi Meir as well. Ah, but did Rabbi Meir not say that regarding the ox that has the power of goring, did he not say that muad does not suffice for muad? Shiny, Shein, V'regel. Shein and Regel, forms of damage like tzon in our Mishnah, are different. Though they are called muad in the sense that they pay full payment, they are different from keren that's repeated itself three times. The Torah miato b'shmirason. The Torah reduces the guarding requirement level with regard to shein and regel. The Omer of Elazar, the Amri lo b'masnisa tana. Rabbi Lozer in some versions say in a Tanaic source the following is taught: Arba dvarim atoro miato b'shmirason. Four forms of damage exist that the Torah allows for minimum level watching or guarding. Namely, if the owner provides that minimum level and damage nevertheless results, the owner will be exempt. V'eluhein, these are the four forms of damage that shmira p'husa is enough, that limited watching is sufficient. Bor, a pit, v'esh, fire, shein, v'regel. And as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice a marking scheme involving a diamond, one of our series markings, where each one of these forms of damage is highlighted. And now, after seeing the list, Bor, Eish, Shein, and Regel as being the four types of damage that the Torah allows the owner to provide a mere shmir p'chusa, we now show you the sources. Bor, dichtiv. Ki yiftach ish bor, o ki yichre ish bor, velo yichasenu. If one exposed a pit or dug a pit and he didn't cover it, and damage happens, so then the owner is guilty. Ha ki sohu, potter. However, by merely covering it, you gain exemption for any subsequent damage. In other words, as Rashi points out, the Torah doesn't expect you to fill in the pit, just cover the pit. So that would be an example of mi'ata b'shmirasan, a minimum amount of protection that you're required to provide. Eish dichtiv, shalem yishalem amavir es habeira. The Torah says that if you're mavir es habeira, you have to compensate for the damage that the fire creates. Ad de'ovid ke'ein mavir. Here, you don't see so much in the translation, but Rashi adds the key word, bipshia. Until you act in a reckless, irresponsible, negligent fashion, only then will you be culpable for damage caused by the fire that you lit. But if you don't act in a reckless fashion, you lit a fire, you provided minimum amount of guard against fire damage, you've done what you're expected to do. You don't have to provide more than that. Shein dichtiv ubir b'stei acher. The pasuk that describes Shein says ubir b'stei acher ad de ovid kein ubir. You are not guilty unless you act. What does kein ubir mean? So Rashi says you would have to have been behaved recklessly. It's as if you took someone else's produce and fed it to your animal. Only then, or something like that, where you behave totally recklessly, only then would you be guilty. But if you didn't do that, you closed your animal behind a fence that has a door that can stand up against normal strength wind, that's not called reckless behavior. That's not, that has nothing, it is nothing like feeding your animal as someone else's food. So you will therefore be innocent. You don't bear any guilt if the animal does get out and damage. Regel dichtiv v'shilach. The pasuk says v'shilach es habe'era ubi'er b'steacher. When are you guilty for regel, for trampling type damage? Ad ovid ke'ein v'shilach. Until you behave in such a way with regard to your animal as if you sent the animal into someone else's field to damage. Similar to what we said before, until you behave recklessly, you only then would you be guilty. But if you provided a minimum amount of guard against the animal doing damage, you have fulfilled your requirement. And as an owner, if the animal nevertheless creates damage, you will not be guilty. Vitanya. Here we have a Tanaic source that gives us information that we've seen earlier in the Masechta, focusing on the psukim we just cited. We had ubir b'steacher, we had v'shilach es habeira, v'shilach ze haregel. The pasuk in Sefer Shmos, Parshas Mishpatim, that says v'shilach es habeira, the word v'shilach ze haregel, that's a reference to damage caused by the animal trampling something underfoot. V'cheinu omer, and you see in another location, the word v'shilach associated with regel. Here the word is mishalche. Don't confuse matters. It has the same shin lamed ches root as the word v'shilach. Mishalche regel hashor v'chamor. So that the word v'shilach in Parshas Mishpatim that speaks about animal damage, v'shilach means damage done through trampling. Ubi'er ze hashen. The pasuk that we cited earlier, ubi'er b'steacher, that's a reference to damage through eating. V'cheinu omer, and in another place you see similarly, the word ubier, kasher yivayer hagolol ad tumo. Earlier in the Masechta, we explained that hagolol ad tumo is a reference to consumption through eating, through the animal chewing away on its food with its teeth. When is the owner held guilty? Taimo de ovid kein v'shilach ubier. Only if the owner behaved in that fashion, in a reckless fashion. Ha lo ovid lo. If the owner didn't behave recklessly, he will be innocent if the animal causes damage. Omar Rabo. Masnisin nami daiko. We take a look at Rashi. Masnisin nami daiko. The taimo, the reason for the exemption in the Mishnah when you close the door, karoi, you provided the minimum level of watching. The reason behind that is Mishum Datura Miata. The Torah itself allowed for a reduced level of watching, reduced from the maximum level to a minimum level. Aval Bekeren Muedes, Lav Kirabi Yehuda Svirule. However, our Mishnah will not agree with Rabbi Yehuda with regard to Karen, goring, that has reached the Muad level. What is Rabbi Huda's opinion with regard to goring Muad level? Rabbi Huda's opinion is that Shmira Pchusa is enough to exempt the owner. Our Gemara here, according to Rashi, is saying that our Mishnah would not agree with that, but rather our Mishnah would take the approach similar to that of Rabbi Meir, that Shmira Me'ula is required. Now, how do you see all of that in the Mishnah? This is amazing. An entire treatise of legal thought is contained somehow in our Mishnah, but where? Let's continue in the Gemara. Rabbo says our Mishnah shows all of this. This is something, by the way, that we mentioned at the outset of this section of the Gemara, that though Shein and Regel and Karen Muad are similar and they all are called Muad regarding payment, they pay full damage. Karen Muad, after it gored three times, it too will pay full damage, just like Shein and Regel after the first damage they create. Nevertheless, regarding guarding standards, there is a difference. So this is the position of our Mishnah. And how do you know all of this? Dekotani Tzon. You notice we have a little arrow to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, pointing to the first line. The Mishnah said, Hakunis Tzon Ladir. The Mishnah decided to describe the requirements in handling Tzon. Tzon, and we mentioned this before, and Rashi says, Dein hazeka ela b'shein v'regel. Tzon does damage only through shein and regel. It doesn't gore. It spoke about tzon. Up till now, in our Masechta, when citing an example of animals that cause damage, the primary example, maybe the only example, was shor, an ox. An ox is an animal that does have goring capacity. All of a sudden, here we're at the sixth parak of Bava Kama, and the primary example is switched to Tzon Michti. B'shor ko askinen v'asi. Up till now, we've been askinen, we've been involved with Shor, and its different forms of damage. Nisni, Shor. Why not continue with Shor? Why did you change the example? My shno dikotoni Tzon. What is it that caused this choosing of a different example all of a sudden Tzon? Lav mishum, is it not because datura miyato b'shmirasan? Isn't it because that by Tzon, which damages through Shein and Regel, the Torah allows for a reduced level of guarding? Lav mishum dekan keren lo ksivabah. Is it not so? Because here, by tzon, keren is not written, meaning the pasuk speaks about ki igach shor ish es shor ehu. In negicha, keren is the horn, and negicha is goring. The Torah speaks explicitly about a shor. It doesn't mention by sheep and goats, even though goats also have horns. But the we'll just have to assume right now that the action that goats do with their horns does not include negicha. So that keren is not written with regard to tzon. Shein v'regel hu dichsiv bei. Damage of shein and regel, of eating and trampling underfoot, is written in the context of tzon. V'komash molon, and our Mishnah is thereby teaching us, the shein v'regel demu'odim hu Shma Mina, that for Shein and Regel, which are Muad, the Shmira Pusa is enough. Our Mishnah, by using the word Tzon, is saying Shein and Regel. And Shein and Regel, it's also saying Muad, because there is no half payments in the case of Shein v'Regel. And the Mishnah says that closing a door Karoi, which is Shmira Pusa, leads to owner exemption. Shma Mina. So this is conclusive that the standard that we expect for Shein v'Regel watching or guarding is less than the standard we would expect for Keren Muad. And that point shows us that the Mishnah is not like Rebbe Yehuda. Because as far as Rebbe Yehuda is concerned, Keren Muad as well, Shmira Pusa is enough. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.